From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin. In a few minutes, gorging on nutcrackers, no ballerina is safe. And we'll look at the hottest topic in education, pre-kindergarten. First, a former Kaufman County Justice of the Peace was convicted today of capital murder and the death last year of Cynthia McClelland. As KERA's Bill Zeeble reports, prosecutors want the death penalty for Eric Williams.
Williams is also accused of killing Kaufman County District Attorney Mike McClelland at the same time McClelland's wife was gunned down, and of murdering Assistant DA Mark Hassey 2 months prior. Those cases against Williams haven't been scheduled. This trial began Monday. Defense Attorney Matt Seymour called no witnesses. In Thursday's closing, he said Williams was innocent and suggested evidence against him was weak.
There's not one single piece of biometric evidence that ties Eric to the McClelland home. Not one fingerprint, not one piece of DNA, not one hair, nothing.
In prosecutor Toby Shook's closing argument, he portrayed Williams as a calculating, cold-blooded killer.
And when he enters that house, he becomes an efficient and an effective, ruthless killing machine.
The guilty verdict was reached in less than 2 hours. Judge Snipes will hear sentencing arguments Monday morning. Bill Zeeble, KERA News.
Thinking of driving 635 tomorrow night? Get ready for a headache. Parts of the highway will be closed and rerouted starting at around 9 o'clock. Here's Heather DeLapp with the LBJ Express team.
This is going to be on eastbound 635. It'll begin just east of Luna. They're going to narrow it down to one lane of traffic, and they're going to force everybody to go north up to Valwood and actually make that U-turn, and then we'll send everybody through the TexPress Direct connectors.
During the downtime, drivers can use those TexPress lanes for free. The work should be completed and roads reopened by 8 o'clock Saturday morning. Today on Think, the topic was early childhood education. It's hard to find someone who opposes it, but the issue is getting people to pay for it. Chris Boyd talked to University of Chicago education expert James Heckman about the obstacles in the way of pre-K.
People don't want to act until they see a problem emerge. Prevention, which can sometimes be far better than remediation or response, is a harder thing to sell. We can arrest a felon at 18. We should put the kid away. We should try to rehabilitate the kid. That's something everybody understands. But to understand that at age 3 months, you can prevent a person from becoming a felon, that's an indirect link. And people don't fully understand it. It's still something that isn't fully appreciated in public policy, and it just has to be addressed. When people do dollar and cents arguments, you say, okay, we want to spend money on the prisons. Just on the reduction in crime alone from promoting these early childhood education is enormously effective.
So what are the challenges to assessing the effectiveness of these programs when, you know, something that an intervention that might start, you know, prenatally is not going to absolutely bear fruit or not entirely bear fruit for, you know, 20 or even 30 years?
There are two aspects to that question. One is the fact that there may be delayed payment, which is true. There is going to be a delay. That's one of the benefits, actually, that it actually covers over the whole lifetime. But when people have accounted for that in studies, I've been engaged myself with others who initiated these studies in following two interventions, one that started in the 1960s, one in the early 70s. And we look at long-term benefits across a variety of different measures. So talking about rate of return, you can actually find that there's a 7 to 10% rate of return on this early childhood work. If you look at sort of what the upfront dollars were and what the lifetime payouts are through age 40, just through age 40. That's a substantial return.
James Heckman is in town to speak at an early childhood education summit in Fort Worth. Today's Think Conversation, part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative, re-airs tonight at 9. You can also listen to the podcast at kera.org/think. 20 different versions of the Nutcracker will adorn North Texas ballet stages this season, from lavish productions to a burlesque version. No other live holiday show comes close to such popularity. And as KERA's Jerome Weeks reports, no other country treats the Nutcracker this way.
The quick answer? The Nutcracker is a cash cow for dance companies and their schools. In the late 80s in North Texas, Mark Bryan Sona used to dance in the Nutcracker, or actually, in Nutcrackers. He'd dance for one company one weekend, another the next weekend, then a third, and so on from Thanksgiving through New Year's.
The best thing about the Nutcracker for ballet companies, especially because there's usually a school attached to a ballet company, is you need a lot of kids. And this is a way to get even your toddlers to perform. So it's a money-making venture for the companies. It's a money-making venture for the schools. And the parents get to see their kids perform on stage. I mean, it's a perfect trifecta.
But saying the Nutcracker is popular because it's profitable begs the question, how did this Russian fairy tale of dancing flowers get so popular, even with people who never attend ballet? I mean, other than vodka, no Russian export has been quite so embraced by Americans. Yet when it premiered in 1892 in St. Petersburg, the Nutcracker was a failure. The musical suite that composer Peter Tchaikovsky later extracted from the ballet was a success, though. So the music remained like a glittery memory of the imperial court. That memory inspired choreographer George Balanchine. 60 years ago, he captured his nostalgic feelings for his own childhood in St. Petersburg with the Nutcracker he made for the New York City Ballet. And what made Balanchine's nostalgia so influential in America was the CBS broadcast of the ballet in 1958. Danielle Georgiou writes about dance and runs her own Dallas company, the Danielle Georgiou Dance Group.
Balanchine's came out at the right time. And I think that Balanchine's was just very appropriate for America. I think coming over and bringing his European heritage to New York and then living that American life made for this very interesting blend.
The blend of Russian classical training with American clarity and athleticism made the Nutcracker appealing to a baby boomer TV audience. So one of the fuels for the Nutcracker's appeal today is nostalgia for our own childhoods, perhaps our own first dance lessons. But ballet companies have additional, more practical reasons for liking it. Mark Brian Sona.
Honestly, as a dancer, it's a very easy ballet. It's short. It's not the artistic challenge that you have with Swan Lake or Giselle. But it's fun to watch. It's a showstopper ballet. It's the Vega show of ballets.
All the different splashy dance numbers let choreographers try out various styles and interpretations. The Texas Ballet Theater has its spoofish, nutty Nutcracker. Mark Brian Sona even offers a burlesque version with lowbrow jokes and bumps and grinds to Tchaikovsky's music.
You can just make your little, you know, your little spin on this, your little spin on that. So every single show is so different.
Patricia Tuzer co-founded the Tuzer Ballet in Richardson in 1984 with her husband, Tanju Tuzer. In the 30 years they've staged it, the Tuzer's Nutcracker has grown to include as many as 50 performers. But this month, their Nutcracker is one of four being offered just at the Eisman Center. Danielle Georgiou says seeing so many Nutcrackers over the years, from the saccharine to the sumptuous, has made it the ballet she loves to hate. Yet she performed in it when she was 7, and she can still recall its childlike wonder.
I don't know, there was like always a part of me that was like, man, that would just be so great to just be a princess for a day, which is an antiquated way of thinking. And when people hear me say that, they're like, there's no way you want to be a princess for a day. But just to have magic surround you, that's the beauty of the Nutcracker for me. And you don't see a lot of magic anymore.
At least, she says, not on stage. Jerome Weeks, KERA News.
And a final note tonight about KERA television. Our TV channels will be off the air for maintenance starting about 2 in the morning on Friday. The work should be done by 8 o'clock. The outage will affect over-the-air viewers as well as some cable and satellite viewers. For the evening, cloudy skies, a 30% chance for showers with a low around 58. Tomorrow, cloudy, 40% chance for storms with a high near 65. It's currently 64 degrees in Dallas and Fort Worth, 67 in Tyler, 62 in Wichita Falls. From the KERA newsroom, I'm Justin Martin.